circumventing, if not usurping, the electoral process, Bernie Sanders now claims this land is his land.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island.
Well, what do you know?
Live from the Monona Terrace in Madison, Wisconsin, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Stephanie Lee. In this hour of What Do You Know, we speak with Game Life author and professor Michael Clune, plus all the news that isn't, and a round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who thinks a door buster at a vacant Walmart is about the saddest thing ever, Michael Feldman.
It is. Saddest thing ever. Oh, yeah. That was pretty good. That was actually him, by the way. Bernie Sanders singing. Honest to God.
That was riveting.
It was good.
It was.
His enunciation is unbeatable. It's impeccable. His singing doesn't exist, but his enunciation was wonderful. You should hear his Born to be Wild. Get your motor running. Okay, in the news, let's just see here now. Cruz charges Trump with New York values. And if he means Billy Joel, I'm with him on this one. Meanwhile, Trump lambasts Cruz for his Saskatoon values, eh? Whatever those would be. The republication of Mein Kampf reveals most of Trump's best lines were stolen. And in publishing, now Hitler is back in print and Cosby is out. So that's... Can't find fatherhood for love nor money. And it's all been remaining. Survey finds that the Walmart closings are more alarming to the public than the government being overthrown. That's number one. Number two on that list is a cable outage. So it's just, government's way down the list. So it's sad, though, to think of all those greeters out panhandling on the street. That's going to be a sad thing. See. But you were my greeter at Walmart. My God. Walmart, save money. Closed stores. That's latest. Okay. Not so funny. not humor necessarily unless you laugh. So it's okay. I don't feel bad about it. Down to $30, the barrel is now worth more than the oil. Like one of those barrels, I bet it costs easily $30. And the bottom has fallen out of the sludge oil market entirely. Now the Keystone pipeline, it's a pipeline to nowhere. No, it's just not going to, just going to be there. Nothing going through it. President Obama's last State of the Union, it was like Mr. Cleaver sitting with his arm around the beeve, times 435. Best part of the show, right? I mean, I'll go leave it to Beaver. I'm sorry, no one knows that show anymore. You go up to Beeve's room there and sit down with his hand around there and explain to him why he had just done something very stupid. Actually, it was not 435 members of Congress. 434 Rand Paul, who's Eddie Haskell, was not there. He was talking to Mrs. Cleaver, actually. Let's see. President talks sense to Congress, leaves them baffled. Another way of saying that, I guess. Good thing there wasn't a pop quiz after it, because little Paulie Ryan was just fiddling with his gavel the entire time. But, Kim Davis came stag to the State of the Union. Apparently that's the state of her union. She is engaged to Steve Avery, though, so that's promising. Speaking of which, Netflix is Making a Murderer takes a Golden Globe for Best Comedy. Okay. Let's see. Now, the Powerball pretty much spent already. Most of the Powerball winnings will go to repay Ted Cruz's Goldman Sachs loan. Yes. Oh, the interest it adds up. Reacting to the whiteout at the Oscars, the Academy announces that Morgan Freeman will receive the Lifetime Achievement Award annually until further notice. Unfortunately, this year, Morgan Fairchild got it. Some kind of a mistake. On the market upside, the more the Dow sinks, the simpler it will be to probate my estate. So that's the good news. Light seen coming from a black hole, that's because they don't want people to think no one's home. And a big night tonight, grab your binoculars or your microscope and you'll see Uranus perched on the moon. What they call unlikely conjunction. That's all the news that is. And thank you so much for your indulgence. It was short. Because there wasn't that much news that wasn't. Most of it was. And I'm not responsible for that. We got a book here I think you'll find of interest. It's called Game Life. It's Michael Klune's kind of memoir as a gamer. And it's of particular interest to me because, you know, gamers are omnipresent now. They're everywhere you turn. And I was too born too late to be a gamer, you know. Pac-Man in bars is not being a gamer. So, but Michael Klune actually at age 7 had an epiphany involving games. And he's got sucked into the game of life, the game life of life. We'll let him talk about it right now. He's with us from Cleveland, Michael Klune. How are you, Michael?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. This is really an eye-opener to me. I actually learned something from reading a book. Kind of amazing. Because I really am sort of baffled by the whole gaming phenomenon. You know, I was born at a strange conjunction where it didn't quite happen yet. But it was important in your life.
Yeah. You know, I'm sort of the first I'm 40 years old. So I'm the first generation that grew up playing games, basically. Mm-hmm. And, it basically shaped the way I see the world in some strange ways from the age of 6 onwards.
Yeah. Was there a particular epiphany at 6 or around there that changed your world?
Yeah, it was the first game I played, which is one of these old text-based adventures. It came out in 81. Called Suspended. And in the game, it was the first time I'd ever thought about death, strangely.
Yeah.
I died in the game, and it sort of taught me something about death, which is that it doesn't matter that much. Because I pressed a button, and I was alive again.
Yeah. Well, that's not really accurate, I don't believe. I believe if you do die, you can't push a button and and start over again.
Well, we'll see.
Now, was it something about you or about something, the fact that games were now available? I mean, there's something about you, even before there were these games and so forth, that must have found this so appealing.
Yeah. I think that's right. You know, I was sort of, I'd moved from Ireland at a fairly young age to the U.S., and I felt sort of out of place in the world.
Yeah.
And games, I felt, gave me a way of relating to the world that felt comfortable. It sort of gave me a way to be alone that didn't feel as isolating as I felt sometimes around my friends who had these strange accents and, you know, strange concerns. And so I think that was part of what drew me in at an early age.
Yeah. Does it also tend to alienate you from friends, though? Because it's pretty much an individual experience, gaming, isn't it?
It is, yes, yeah. It's a way of exploring your solitude is one way I've thought about it. Although in the book, as I talk about, you know, part of it is being alone and being away from people, but it was also a space in which I worked out strategies that I could use in navigating social life, the perilous social life of middle school, in all kinds of ways. So it kind of played a dual role for me in terms of social life.
Yeah. So destroying objects became useful in real life?
Oh, yes, yes, very much.
Victory at all costs and avoiding error. Are these the lessons that to be learned?
Yeah, well, there were some of the lessons. The strangest lesson I probably learned was from a game called Pirates, which I decided would be a really good model of how to get friends in middle school. to try to set up a pirate operation in our Catholic school, and it ended up not going so well. But I did actually make some friends through it, so it was a victory.
Yeah. And speaking of Catholic, your mother was when she found your Dungeons and Dragons was appalled that you were doing this.
Yeah, she was, and you know, at that time there was this hysteria. The two big hysterias of my childhood years, one was, you know, child molestation. Everyone was afraid of that. And the other one was Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they're related. I hope they're not related. But I got into Dungeons and Dragons, and my mom was, like, deeply appalled. You know, this was some kind of evil thing. And as I thought about it, you know, I sort of thought, as an adult, thinking back on this, I kind of thought she was kind of right. You know, there is something about
evil.
There's something strange about those games that has to do with their use of numbers. Everything becomes numerical in those games. It was the addition of numbers to fantasy.
Yeah.
And it gave fantasy this real weight that it didn't have otherwise and made it more attractive and more have more of a gravitational pull.
Yeah. And your father is implicated in this, right? Because in church, the thing with the numbers in church was rather unusual.
Yeah. So my dad. You know, we used to go to church every Sunday, and he had this idea that what would help my memory was that if I memorized all the hymn numbers that they had posted up at the front, and at the end he would quiz me on what there's six or seven different numbers of the hymn book.
Yeah.
And if I remembered it, I would get some money, and I used that money to buy Dungeons and Dragons games.
Yeah. And it was helpful that those sort of memory and number skills actually were crucial for your gaming adventures.
Yeah. It was. You know, I guess one of the big breakthroughs of gaming that happened in the 80s and continues today was everything became statistics. You would have a character, and they would have certain kinds of numbers associated with them in terms of whether they could perform certain actions. And this sort of numeralization of this fantasy world, it was a major thing. And being a writer, someone who's always been drawn to words, numbers were always very alien to me. And so as I learned to manipulate them, they always felt, you know, they had this resistance that fascinated and repelled me.
Yeah. And of course, anything computers, it is all numbers, basically, right? It's all the code and so forth.
Yeah, underneath everything, underneath all the images we see and everything, as we know, it is, it's code, right? It's not words. It's not English language or any human language words. It's a machine code. And so there's something unsettling about that. And games kind of give you a relationship to those numbers that underlie so much of our lives now that I became very interested in.
And was this something that you did not get from Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yes. I write about, you know, I thought the biggest mistake of educators' relationship to games was they thought they would make games that taught you things, right? And of course, that is a recipe for really producing really boring games. So in this book, I really tried to go the opposite direction, is look at the games that were really fun to me and try to see if there was some insight I could gain by thinking about how and why they were fun.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Dungeons and Dragons. I taught high school for a while, many years ago, alternative high school. So there was some of the students had actually taken over the janitor's room. I don't know where I think they threw out the janitor, too. And it became the Dungeons and Dragons room. And there's a group, and they were all really nice kids. I liked them and stuff, but they would not tell us what was going on in that room there. But it was Dungeons and Dragons, and I didn't understand it, and it seemed very, not scary exactly, but a world that I was not allowed into. And just to look at Dungeons and Dragons for a moment, isn't that sort of the archetype for a lot of these sort of mythical adventures? And what was it about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're totally right. It really was the archetype. And part of what was so fascinating about it was this thing that kids could get into that the adult world had absolutely no clue what it was about.
Right.
And you know, my own experience was somewhat strange because I could never get any. None of my friends wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons. They thought it was like for nerds, you know. And so I was always trying to get people to play with me, and I couldn't. So when they first had the first computer game that you could play a Dungeons and Dragons game on the computer, that completely turned me on, and I was able to access this underworld through the computer. But the groups of kids who would be playing this, like in, you know, with actual other people, they always were this sort of, they seemed like a mix between a cult and like a punk band or something in my school. And I was always fascinated by them. But yeah, absolutely, that was the beginning of everything, I think.
Yeah. But what was it about, I know the fact that adults could not access it, but there's something about the gameplay itself and what you could achieve and what you could, and the defeats you had to overcome. What was it about that?
Yeah, it's a good question, and my own thought is part of it is it's this fusion of fantasy. Just, you know, if you look at it just as the kinds of things people are doing in Dungeons and Dragons, they're killing dragons, they've got swords, they're living in this fantasy medieval world, sort of like J.R.R. Tolkien. But what made it completely different was you added dice. All of a sudden, everything that you had to do, every decision you made, every task you had to complete, mm-hmm. had these numbers involved. And mm-hmm. and you had huge books full of statistics, hit points, which is how many points you had until you got killed. Everything had numbers. And the addition of those numbers to this fantasy gave it this sense of reality and a solidity to it, where you felt like you're not just doing something make-believe, but you're doing something that has its own logic, its own rules that are sort of outside the normal world, but have a real kind of weight to it. So it didn't feel like make-believe. It felt like you were really entering this other world. And I think the role of the dice and the numbers had a really major role in making that happen.
And then once the computer got involved, it was computer-generated random numbers?
Yeah, the computer took over the role of exactly. You'd press a button and it would roll these, you know, roll the dice basically using a random number generator.
Yeah.
And and that's sort of what made it work.
Yeah. And what's interesting too, you know, when you think about it, religious texts going way back have a lot of them have numerological associations with the in the text itself. So there is a whole. The numbers were involved from the very beginning in some of this kind of important business.
Absolutely, yeah, that's a really great point. Yeah, I mean, you go back to Pythagoras, you know, the ancient Greek mathematician who had this very, you know, a belief of the mystical significance of numbers. And as you say, you see that in many religious traditions, certainly Judeo-Christian traditions, where the significance of various numbers, the significance of dates, page numbers, verse numbers. It does have this kind of strange mystical significance that gives us a sense that we're looking at a reality beyond the visible reality.
Yeah. So you were back, and it was 2D. Everything was 2D. So you're working on a flat map for your games, and then of course it went to 3D. But you think something was lost when things went 3D.
Yeah, you know, I really do. And now a lot of people are talking about this Oculus Rift headset where you can sort of put it on and just be immersed in this be in it. To me, that ruins a lot of the magic of games, which is what makes games really appealing is that they're different from reality and that you've got what we call a fourth wall. Like when you're watching a play or a movie, part of what makes it appealing is that there's that distance between where you are and the audience and what's happening on the screen. Mm-hmm. And when you erase that, I feel like a lot of the magic, a lot of the sense that there's this other world gets collapsed. And so when I've talked with game designers recently, one of the things that I've been interested in is people are beginning to understand that. And if you think about Minecraft, which many people, you know, which is probably the most popular computer game of all time, mm-hmm. its graphics are very, unrealistic and primitive looking, mm-hmm. and people love that because it gives you a sense that it's not like the real world. It is this other kind of world.
Yeah. It's sort of like a hieroglyphic you're working with.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But the difference between two dimensionality and 3D itself. Is something that you find to be pretty an important difference.
Yeah, there was you know, a lot of the early games were basically maps. You know, you would have a bird's eye view of this world. And I have this very vivid memory that I write about in the book where I was playing this map-based game. I was at my friend's house. He dropped me off. His father dropped me off. And I was walking along the it was snowy out. And I was looking at the ground. The ground was covered with snow, and it had this kind of bluish radiance under the streetlights. And it looked sort of like a computer screen. And I began imagining that the ground underneath me was a map, and that the little icicles and twigs and footprints all had, you know, were cities and rivers and so forth. And I just dawdled along looking at this at the surface of the world in this new way until the police had to come get me because my mom was worried. I was out there for like 3 hours.
And when they came to get you, what did you say to them? What were you doing?
I just said I was just. They were like, "What were you?" They asked me, "What were you doing? And were you dawdling?" And I used the word that they gave me. I said, "Yes, I was dawdling."
Dawdling, yeah. You don't hear much about dawdling anymore, and it's a shame too because you had something you could do. So you're dawdling. Putting off doing anything is dawdling. That's a good thing.
Well, nowadays, if like kids are like, you know, kids are walking around by themselves, like, you know, the cops come for the parents. You know, it's like they don't really have that opportunity anymore.
Yeah. And they should take the parents away. That's what I mean. Now, if we come to the present, though, do you still game? Are you still a gamer?
I do. Yes. Yeah. I.
What do you do now? I'm kind of curious.
Well, I play. You know, there's been a lot of. One thing I'll say that people often ask me is there's different kinds of games out there, and there's one kind of game that I don't play, which is what's called massive online multiplayer games.
Yeah.
Is
that too social for you?
In a way, well, it's, in a way, it's like sort of the worst part of social life because it's and it also has this addictive quality that I try to stay away from. So yeah. I play, you know, games that have, you know, the primitive kinds of graphics, the top down kinds of graphics, games like Civilization, these kinds of things, and I play for like a couple hours, you know, 1 or 2 hours, 3 or 4 days a week. And yeah, I still love it. I stopped the book at the end of middle school, but I certainly, you know, still do enjoy playing games, and I think that they're a real art form.
Yeah. But when you come down to these games that are largely, you know, the shooter games and the mass shooter game, you know, it seems to be a variety of different ways you can shoot people and and destroy things, right? And because the graphics are so real, it's the photographic realism of what you're doing. Does that, in your opinion, would that have, it's be not the kind of thing that you would play, but does that have an effect at all on the player as to what is acceptable in actual life or not? Of course, that's a big question.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a question lots of people talk about. But I'll give you a little anecdote that was really interesting to me. In the New York Review of Books, this guy wrote a review of my book, and he talked about the person who was responsible for the Sandy Hook shooting. Who the media reported at the time that individual who committed that horrific crime was really into shooter games. Mm-hmm. But what this writer did was he looked into this guy's background, and he found that the game that he was obsessed with, the game that he played the most, is a game called Dance Dance Revolution. Mm. And you know, and he would obsessively play this. So to me, that suggests that the link between individuals' inner lives and the games they play isn't as simplistic as we might imagine. In other words, so I think there's a lot going on there. And I think that just as, you know, 100 years ago, people would worry about the kinds of novels people would be reading. Today we have the same fears about games, and I think I don't think there's a simple answer. In other words, I don't believe that just because someone likes to play shooting games, they're going to go shoot people, or just because people play Dance Revolution, they're going to go shoot people. I think there's a kind of
or worse, they're going to go out and dance. That would be the
right,
worst,
worst
possible outcome. it might have been that the connection actually was some kind of motor skills, you know, for this guy.
Or some kind of obsessive. Yeah, who knows? I was just very fascinated by that, and kind of want to know more. Yeah.
Yeah. You never did any Dance Dance Revolution in the early stages of when they were.
No. I've never. Yeah.
And there was a dance map you could follow.
Yeah, I play games because I want to get away from dancing.
Yeah. Okay. Did your mother, by the way, ever come to accept the fact that you were a gamer, or was that a tough, impossible sell?
You know, she did. It actually, one of the nice things was she really liked the book, which I was sort of nervous about. I was wondering how my mom would react to the book, but she really loved it. And you know, really, one of the things about this book is I wrote it not intending to write it about games. I wrote it as a way of trying to write about my childhood. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult for me to recapture the texture of my childhood. But by going to these games, which I had these vivid memories of, and that I found were interwoven with scenes and relationships in my childhood, I was able to tell that story. So, and I think that's what she appreciated in the book. I think she's still ambivalent about games, but she did like the story. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Well, and that interplay in the book, I think, is what's most fascinating about it, is that because you're learning in games something that you didn't know you could do in life. Even if there's not a direct application for some, you know, for going out and getting a sword that can kill better than the one you had before, but yeah, like the whole thing about victory and defeat and how to, I mean, for a kid now, is there actually a way you can apply just those sorts of things to your life, or is it more just a sense of more self confidence in yourself?
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting question. There's this big movement now called gamification, where people want to take their businesses and add gaming elements into the workplace to try to make workers more engaged. You know, I think that's just a terrible idea.
Yeah.
You know, to me, the magic is that games, like literature, which is what I'm fundamentally interested in, is outside of reality, and it enables us to discover things that aren't necessarily one-to-one applications. So the map idea is an example I often use. Playing those map-based games, they gave me a new way to look at the surface of the world and to appreciate very elements that I would ordinarily not even think twice about, like snowy lawns under street lamps.
Yeah.
It's those kinds of unexpected resonances that I find fascinating.
And don't you think, like, for many kids, they have skills and qualities that are completely undervalued in the real world?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and I think that's more so. I mean, as a literature professor, I feel that is really true. We are so focused on this testing regime and on very narrow sense of what skills are will lead to employment. That when you actually talk to employers, often what they say is, you know, we want someone who's not, you know, who's going to be able to learn future skills, who's going to have those capacities to communicate and to think and to imagine. And I feel too often those qualities are sort of left on the cutting room floor because they don't fit into our metrics.
Yeah. I certainly felt those kids I was talking about in Dungeons and Dragons, they were all really smart kids, you know. So I figured it couldn't be that bad, whatever they're doing in the janitor's old room, you know.
Yeah.
They're super smart. So it was interesting. It was interesting. Well, you know, the book is great. It's called Game Life. Michael W. Kloon is the author. And Michael, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Michael Kloon, ladies and gentlemen. He's a gamer. Game Life. Yes. All right. It's on Farrar, Strauss, and Giraud. It's French, you know. All right, Game Life. You're not a gamer. Were you a gamer when you were a kid?
No, I didn't.
No.
You know, like you, I played Asteroids in the bar after a few beers. But
oh, yeah, Asteroids.
That's, really
that's a good one on beers.
I don't think that's really
I like considered. The tank one, too. Is that the tank? That's not the tank.
No.
The tank tank Jeff, battle. Tank battle was good.
Jeff is our little resident.
Yeah,
gamer,
no, though. Jeff, yeah. did you do it as a kid, Jeff?
Yes.
Yes? What was your...
And I played Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons. See, you're exactly the person I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I contend that video games...
You contend...
It's too hard.
Okay, yeah, it's too hard. Yes, you contend that video games... Go ahead.
I think they saved us from Dungeons and Dragons. I think it furthered it because...
Saved us.
Some could say that Dungeons and Dragons was a little
boring.
Sure, you want to go fight a dragon or be a wizard.
Sure,
but
fight
all
a dragon.
Was, okay, I'm a wizard.
A wizard.
I have to roll the dice.
Yeah.
What did I do to the dragon? And that's kind of boring. Video games, though. Be a wizard.
You can actually be a wizard and actually slay a dragon.
Yes.
And it's a much more satisfying experience.
Yes.
As a game.
Right.
But how old are you? But how old are you now? You won't say, because he wants to keep his little PS4 with him everywhere he goes. Okay, well, that's cool. All right, so hiya.
Hi.
How's things?
Good.
Mm-hmm. Huh, good?
Very good.
Drive up okay from Chicago?
Yeah, very good today. I don't know. Yeah. There was no...
They finally fixed the road? That road's never finished.
No, it'll never be fixed.
Yeah. It's like the pyramids.
That's right. Just constant.
Well, I guess they finished those after a while. Well, it's like the great cathedrals.
Yeah, they could probably start again, though. Add an addition here, addition there.
Well, they finished one end, and the other end needs repair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this tune here now.
This tune here, actually.
Speaking of numbers, and numbers are very important in music, too.
Numbers are, yeah.
Crucial.
Numbers, I don't know. This tune. What,
that's why they call them numbers.
Oh, that's right. That's this little number.
Yeah.
Well, this little number actually last Sunday won a Golden Globe.
Did.
For best original song. So
no kidding.
I thought I'd do a jazz version of Writings on the Wall.
Writings on the Wall. John and Jeff.
Michael Feldman.
Oh. I don't know if these are the cards I accepted or rejected. Well, seems about the same either way. Okay. That was already pretty good. All righty. Chris Quinlan from Utah. Hey, Chris. Did you study abroad in college? Come on. This, you say to me? You mean go overseas, I assume. Yes. No. Did you? Yeah, my kids have. Or one of my kids has, anyhow. But did you?
No, I didn't until right after I'd finished. I went for grad school. Yeah. But I figured, I work in study abroad now. Yeah. And it at a university. And a lot, we find that it contributes to the development of the individual. So I figured as a well-rounded...
I've done nothing that contributed to my development as an individual. Either I was an individual or I wasn't. I was never going to develop. And I think I found that to be true. But I think it's great. My daughter is now a Latina as a result of traveling abroad. She's a registered Latina. And it's great. Her accent is impeccable, I guess. I don't know. I don't really speak that much Spanish. I speak a little Spanish, but yeah, I think it's a good thing. Zane from Prairie du Sac says, I'm a student at Wingra School. Do you like waffles? Sounds like an interesting young man. Where is Zane? Oh, hey, Zane. Hey, can you stand up here, Zane? Nice to meet you. Packer fan, Zane?
Yes.
Yeah. Any predictions on the game?
Eh.
I think I'd go with that. I like to see talking heads sit around and just say, all those guys that sit around there and annoy you for about an hour, just so they go, eh, over to you. I don't know. So, yeah. Okay. You're going to watch, though, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably? Unless what? Unless something else is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there something tonight that's going on that you might? Got someplace to be?
Not really.
No? No. What do you like to do most?
Probably hang out with my dog.
Your dog? Oh, that's one. What kind of dog do you have?
Vizsla.
A what?
A Vizsla.
Is that a dog or a drink? Is it Vizsla?
Yeah, it's a dog.
What does it look like?
It's completely brown.
Completely brown. Okay, but that covers a lot of dogs, really. Is it like a fuzzy brown or short-haired?
It's short-haired.
If I saw it, it's often mistaken for another. What kind of dog?
I don't know.
No. What?
Weinbrenner.
A Weinbrenner. Okay. And how old is your dog?
Six.
What's his name?
Scylla.
Scylla?
Mm-hmm.
Is she?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Mine is two. Mine is Bella. Yeah, but she's just about a year old. Mine is, I don't know if yours is a combination of different dogs.
No.
No, it's a straight, it's a whole expensive, real deal.
Pretty sure.
Yeah.
Don't
that agree?
Don't know a lot about dogs.
Yeah. What is one really cool thing that your dog does?
Sleeps.
Yeah. And what is this about waffles? You got a thing about waffles?
Yeah.
What about them?
I like waffles.
You like waffles? Because anything you could ask me, you asked about the waffles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's also a bottom question.
Oh, I didn't see it. Oh, yeah, what is that?
What?
What your bottom question? Beneath the waffles, there is the Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah. If you want to ask it, maybe I can answer it that way.
Oh, yeah. Who's your favorite character in Star Wars?
I like, let's see, you know, the Harrison Ford.
Han Solo.
Huh?
Han Solo.
Yeah, but not so much now.
Yeah.
Because he's sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's yours?
Luke and Yoda.
Luke and Yoda. Who is Luke now? They can't have the same Luke, can they? Because he would be about 60 years old now.
No, they had the same one. But he
really?
Did. Yeah.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Meh.
And then they have the same Darth Vader?
No, he's long gone.
Yeah. I think he actually died, but you could press start, he'd be born again. So. All right, well, and have you seen the new one?
Yes.
Quick review of it. What'd you think of it?
It was pretty good.
Pretty good. All right. From Zane, ladies and gentlemen. Prairie du Sac. Thank you, Zane. Here, I got... Let's give Zane something, because I didn't mean to put you on the spot so much.
Sure. Yeah. How about a Triple X What Do You Know t-shirt? Not much since 1985.
Yeah. One of our t-shirts. Okay. I know you're thrilled about that, but... It's good. If you're eating waffles, you can spill anything on it. It won't matter. One of our t-shirts. Stephen Hart is here from Janesville, where he runs a salvage yard. Auto salvage. What's Newsville? Is that right? Huh? Yeah. Is that you?
Newville.
It's a town in Wisconsin.
Janesville is or Newville? Okay. Are you Stephen Hart? Okay. Well, let's get the. Otherwise, you're just blowing smoke. I just got to go up there and see what's new in the salvage yard. Maybe there's anybody need a part here? Because I can probably get it for you cheap. Something that's been sitting there for a while and is really a good find for somebody if he knew it was there, is what I'm thinking, Stephen. You know what I mean? You probably got a lot. Can I get you just to stand up here a second? Because if I lean, it affects my cervical disc.
What's up?
How are you?
Yeah, fine.
What you got in the yard there that is it looking good and been sitting there for a while?
Some old Mercedes, some...
Oh, stop right there. Does she run?
No.
Okay.
That's why they're there.
Yes, it is auto salvage.
Yes.
Is there one, like, what model you got there?
Oh, God, I don't know. Some old crap.
You got to be a salesman about this. Oh, you know, you want to move some of this junk out of there.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of old cars. Let's see what we got here.
Something that could be made to run.
Oh, we got Saturns. We like a Saturn.
What, you go from Mercedes to a Saturn? That's the only thing you can... How long have you been running this yard here?
Well, it's been in there since the 40s, I think.
You've been running it since the 40s?
I don't run it. My brother Mike does.
Oh, your brother does.
Yes. Yeah. Let's see, what else? We got...
Saturns run, at least?
Well, they did until we take them apart and turn them into scrap.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's what you do there.
Yeah, take motors out, take trannies out, take stuff out. And then we, let's see.
Could you put one of the Saturn motors in the Mercedes?
If you got the money, you got the time, you can do anything.
Thank you, Stephen Hart from Janesville. Oh, yes, anything that you wanted to ask me?
I wanted to know what kind of games you play. I mean, you're obviously an intelligent guy, and I wanted to know. Oh, come on.
It's not that obvious.
Well, it's not that obvious? Okay. What kind
Keep
of
it games? Well hidden.
All right. What kind of games do you play?
I don't play games. I'm not really a gamer type games?
Yes.
I don't.
You don't play PC games. You don't play phone games. You don't play.
No, I play that bird one where you throw birds at objects. Angry. What? Angry. Yeah, but that got dumb after a while, and I kept. And then I kept going back to the beginning every time. I didn't save it or something. And well, really a tremendous waste of time.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of games that are a waste of time. It's just that.
Well, what do you do?
I play a lot. I play some online games. Day of Defeat.
Data Feed?
Day of Defeat.
Oh, Day of Defeat. I thought you were a hacker or something.
Skyrim.
Skyrim. What would that be?
That's an immersive game. It's really big.
A what?
An immersive game is kind of.
Does he go underwater for it?
Very, 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 very complicated, very nice graphics game.
Can you explain it to me just briefly so I can? I know it's complicated, but I'm a smart guy, right?
You're a smart guy. I think so, anyways.
Immersive game means that what?
You're in a place and you look at all the yes, kind of, yeah. It's very, very, if you did, I mean, you've got the time, you've got the graphics, you can do, and it's an amazingly looking game.
Yeah.
And you can see all.
Who are you in that game, may I ask?
Well, you can be different races. You can be different players.
Yeah, who do you tend to be?
Well, right now I'm an Arganian, which is kind of a scaly, kind of weird-looking creature. It looks like a dragon or a small little dragon guy.
And it's called what?
Skyrim.
No, what is your reptile guy called?
I don't know. I just
come on, you do too. No. Yes, you do.
No.
I don't want to say it.
You're right.
Yes, I get immersed with you and I see this.
I play locally. I don't play it.
You're the guy from the salvage yard. Oh. You scaly dragon.
Yeah. So many.
What can you do as that dragon that you can't do in the salvage yard?
You can do magic. You can do sword flay. You can do all kinds of stuff. So it's interesting. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Thank you.
Okay. Nice talking to you. Pleasure. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Mercedes, Saturn. I don't know. They're all junk anyway, so it doesn't really matter, I guess, too much. We're going to play a round of the What Do You Know quiz because this is a fabulous chance for you to show what you've learned all these years in school and in life itself and through game playing, I'm sure. Before we can do that, though, we have to know who can and cannot participate in this quiz. And who did I give that to? Yes, come here, sir, if you would. The four disclaimers, of course, and today reading them is...
Bob Butson,
where are you from, Bob?
I'm from Platteville originally.
From Platteville originally, where are you from now, Bob?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, I'll give this to you, and I'll get out of your line of sight.
Thank you. All questions used on What You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Really rude to win the Powerball and not quit your job. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done, Bob. Thank you. You're a good man. I don't care what anybody says. Let's see the hands. All right, your hand was up. Yes, come over. Yes, you. Come on down. Oh, she's excited. You're so excited. I'm glad to help. It's just to see you that excited. It warms my heart.
Thank you.
And you are?
Kathleen.
Kathleen, are you from around here, Kathleen?
Menominee, up near Eau Claire.
Oh, you're from Menominee. Yeah, I've been up to the State Fair. The Menominee Fair.
They're Dunn County Fair.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And what'd you say your name was?
Kathleen.
Kathleen, yes. And short-term memory, it's going. And where are you from? Menominee.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Kathleen, give me one good reason, besides your intense excitement, you should play this quiz.
I didn't get to last time when I was here 15 years ago.
Okay, that's a good reason, I guess. Then you get to now. Come on, lead. Come on. Kathleen from Menominee. Yes, right there. Have a seat.
Thank you.
This is really an important thing for you.
It's fun. Yes. I listen to you a lot.
Well, thank you very much. I don't hear much of that anymore. But very nice to have you here. What do you do up there in Menominee when you're doing things?
I nanny.
You're right.
I take care of children right now.
Oh, you're a nanny?
Well, yeah.
Just random children or?
No. Some dear children I love very much.
Yes, good. Related to you or do you?
By love.
By love. Good. And do you have hobbies or you're not a gamer, are you?
Well, you know, years ago I did.
You did?
What was it called? The farm game. Farmville?
Farmville is still a very big game, isn't it? Yeah.
I was really glad that I left it some years ago because it was
becoming
addictive.
A problem.
It could be addictive, gaming.
It was addictive?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, spent too much time.
Yeah.
So I don't. I do play Words with Friends.
Words with Friends. So it's kind of like a social thing.
Yeah.
You can do with.
Yeah. It's like Scrabble online.
Yeah. I've seen people do it, but I've never had enough friends, you know, to play it with
right.
Do you actually, when Words with Friends, do you actually know the people? Are they actually friends?
Some you know.
Yeah.
Some and very good friends in the audience right now.
Yeah.
And some, you can be, you can ask, I think it's called Let Them Choose a Random Opponent.
Oh.
And then you don't know who they are, and you play against them. And every once in a while I might say, where are you from? And I play with people in Michigan and Florida. And
ooh. Yeah. any beyond our shores?
I played for a while with someone in Italy.
Oh. Did you have to play in Italian at that point?
No, thank goodness. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Okay. And so the friend, it could be friends friends by love.
It could be.
And before you were a nanny, what line of work were you in?
I worked with elderly people with Alzheimer's.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. And I've done
some. Do you remember who they were?
Hospice. I do. Luckily, I do. They didn't always, but yeah.
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 We had an Alzheimer's ball here I was part of. Some years ago, and it was Alzheimer's Ball, a night to remember for those who can't, which I thought was a little bit rude. But, you know, poor thing. And as I'm approaching Alzheimer's, I'm enjoying it quite a bit, actually.
Yes.
It's sort of a good thing.
It looks different on the other side, doesn't it?
Yes, there's a lot I'd like to forget. You know, but you forget all the wrong things. The things you'd
sometimes
like to forget, you cling to.
You remember, sometimes, yeah.
I find that anyhow. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Were you trained in that field?
I was.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then your secret passion.
Oh.
If you care to speak of it, I mean, if it's really a secret passion, we can talk about it later. But I mean, it's something that you really...
Something that I really like.
Yeah, to do or to...
I'm really... I have a lot more free time than I used to some years ago, and I'm really enjoying art right now. And I'm going to art museums.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yeah.
Are you doing a little painting or drawing yourself?
I don't.
No.
I do write a little. That's my, I guess, outlet.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right, Kathleen, someone out there plays along with you. You know how the quiz works.
I do.
Okay. And we have various categories, but how do they get to play the quiz in the first place?
If people want to play the quiz, they're going to pick up the phone and dial 800-942-5669 and answer this qualifying question.
Okay, the phones are ringing off the hook. Put the phone back on the hook, will you? So we can... Lyle, what are you doing back there? And, I'll read the qualifying question while the phones start ringing off. What's the number again?
That number again is 800-942-5669. That's 1-800-1-NOW or 1-800-WHACK-NOW.
Okay, the question is, we want to know the percentage of people who found President Obama tearing up to be acceptable. Okay. Roughly within 5 percentage points, shall we say, of the answer, and we'll give this to you. The percentage of people who found President Obama tearing up during his speech on gun control found that to be acceptable. Okay, let's go on the phones right now. Oh, yeah, here, we got some. Catherine's on there. Hey, Catherine.
It's a beautiful town.
Catherine.
Catherine's a beautiful town. How are you, Catherine?
Hey, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you? You're in Arkansas, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
Down in the woods.
Yeah. Oh, hold on. Nice to hear from you. Catherine, recently the president made a speech about gun control, and he teared up during it. The percentage of Americans who found that to be acceptable, that it was okay that the president cried a bit.
Oh, probably 45%.
Or higher.
Or higher, maybe 60%.
How many?
60.
60, 60?
Yeah.
Yes, that's much better. 65% said it was okay that he cried. We've come a long way. Catherine. And Kathleen, this is going to get confusing here. Catherine, this is Kathleen.
Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Kathleen.
Yeah. What are you doing this morning there in Deer, Arkansas?
I'm being retired, surviving in the woods.
Yeah.
Barely.
You're,
so
really?
I basically fetch wood, haul water, keep a wood stove going.
Okay. Sounds like a great time. You're hunting and gathering and foraging.
Not exactly.
Okay. All right. All right. Two of you work as a team right now. We have various categories. What are they?
Those categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Catherine, you're up. What would you like?
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends. This could be anything. Talk it over now. This is very collaborative. We're talking about names of groups of animals. Always strange. But is it a shrewdness, a skulk, or a gang of apes? No, that's a stupid question. That's going to be impossible. Let me get you different odds and ends here. Okay.
What do you think, Kathleen?
Okay, you want to do that? That's
no,
fine.
No, I don't know.
Oh, okay. No,
okay, say
not...
that again, Michael.
Okay. Who gets more sales, the unfriendly or the rude, or the friendly or the rude salesperson? We changed the question because it was stupid.
So let's say friendly.
Friendly or the rude salesperson? Overall, over the years, especially in high-end items, who has the more sales?
I think it's counterintuitive, Catherine, and yeah. I think if they're high-end items, yeah. I think it'd be the rude person.
Okay, I'll go with you.
Yes, the rude. I never bought a high-end thing, but they're rude to me, I buy it.
One right. The remaining categories are current events, people, places, school, and science.
Oh, this is one for you get this one right, and you win the quiz. Okay. What would you like, Kathleen?
Places.
What's places? It? Places? Could
yeah.
be anywhere?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Okay.
I think so.
All right. Okay, here. Do more people want love in Finland, Denmark, or Sweden?
They're all Scandinavian countries. They're...
Just answer the question. Don't give me a,
Denmark.
I don't need really a lecture on what Scandinavia
okay.
is.
All right, Sweden. Catherine, what do you think?
Sweden's fine.
Sweden is fine. Yes, Sweden, number one. Denmark close behind, followed by Finland. Holy cow!
Kathleen, you can show off your Wisconsin pride with tote bags from two of its most venerable institutions, the Green Bay Packers and Michael Feldman's What Do You Know show, as well as a What Do You Know cap and travel mug. Catherine, you'll start your day with lively and satisfying Steep and Brew breakfast blend coffee and relax in the afternoon with rich and flavorful Costa Rican Terrazu from Madison's Steep and Brew Coffee. Coffee done right. Congratulations to both of you.
You won!
Hey, Feldman fans, escape the winter chills and join us in Jacksonville next month. We'll be at the Florida Theater on Saturday, February 20th, for a live broadcast of What Do You Know. Ticket information is available at notmuch.com. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international.
She's happy with that tote bag she got. I'm glad someone finally took that off her hand. She's thrilled.
This is PRI, Public Radio International.
Oh, yeah, you betcha. How long till game time? Not that I'm worried. Might have one or two before game time.
Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.
You betcha.
That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, and I'm Stephanie Lee. In this hour of What Do You Know, we razz things up with award show host John Wilson, plus a new batch of Thanks for the Memos, All the News That Is, and a round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man with Milwaukee values, Michael Feldman.
Oh yeah, Milwaukee values. Milwaukee values, which can be summed up with the phrase, come by the house later. Which foreigners think is actually going to mean an offer on your house, but it's not. It actually means come by the house. Come by the house. Well, you know, each week at this time, we read actual memos sent in by actual listeners, because it's called Thanks for the Memos. What are you going to do? And this, we're very lucky to get our hands on this. It is the Army Revised Breastfeeding and Lactation Support. One man's army. And it reads as follows. This is an actual thing here from the Army Directive. It's 215-43, Revised Breastfeeding and Lactation Support Policy. Okay. All right. One references A, Army Directive 2015-37, Breastfeeding Lactation Support Policy, 29 September 2015, hereby rescinded. However, B, Army Regulation AR 600-8-24, Offer Transfers and Discharges, 12 April 2006, including Rapid Action Revision Number 313, September 2011. There's nothing about that here. It's just they want you to know about that. Anyhow, and C, AR 600-20, Army Command Policy, 6 November 2014. D, AR 614-30, Overseas. When do we get to the lactation and breastfeeding? 27-2015, E, AR 635-200, Active Duty Enlisted Administrative Separation, 6 June 2005, including Rapid Action Revision Number 3, 6 September 2011. Two, okay, here we go. Extensive medical research has documented that breastfeeding has significant health, nutritional, immunologic, developmental, emotional, social, and economic benefits.
Wow.
Breastfeeding has economic benefits. For both mother and child. In light of these benefits, commanders are responsible for notifying all soldiers of this breastfeeding and lactation support policy during initial pregnancy counseling. Commanders will counsel all pregnant soldiers. You really want your drill sergeant to handle this, I'm sure. Counsel all pregnant soldiers as required by AR 600-824 or AR 635-200. Three, soldiers who want to breastfeed upon return to duty will notify their chain of command as soon as possible. This notification allows commanders to determine how to best support the soldier and ensure a workplace with appropriate space for expressing milk. Lactation, you know, this Army has changed. This is very good. Lactation support, including counseling, and no longer just smoke them if you got them. It's lactation support.
Oh, jeez. I won't say it.
What?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
Lactation support, including counseling and equipment, is available through military treatment facilities and TRICARE. Commanders will designate a private space other than a restroom with locking capabilities for a soldier to breastfeed or express milk. This space must include a place to sit, a flat surface other than the floor, still the Army, I guess, and to place the pump on, an electrical outlet, and access to a safe water source within reasonable distance from lactation space. Commanders will ensure that soldiers have adequate time to express milk, but must be aware that each soldier's situation is unique. The time required to express milk varies and depends on several factors, including the age of the infant, amount of milk produced, quality of the pump. Too much information, you know. You know, it is the Army. They got it. And distance the pumping location is from the workplace, as well as how conveniently located the water source is from the pump location. For example, new mothers commonly express milk every 2 to 3 hours for 15 to 30 minutes, but this time frame may change as the child ages, and as a mother does, I would think, too. When a child is 6 months old and begins eating solid foods, this doesn't seem like a usual Army directive. This is kind of like it. The number of breaks a soldier needs to breastfeed or express milk may decrease. Lactation support personnel at military treatment facilities or through TRICARE are available to help soldiers develop individualized plans. Granders will provide reasonable lactation breaks to soldiers for at least 1 year after the child's birth. Soldiers must supply the equipment needed to pump and store the breast milk. TRICARE covers the purchase of the breast pump. Soldiers who are breastfeeding, is this too much information? Yeah. Are you a little curious about it? Okay. Soldiers who are breastfeeding or expressing milk remain eligible for field training, mobility exercises, and deployment after completing their postpartum deployment deferment period. During field training and mobility exercises, commanders will provide private space for soldiers to express milk. If the soldier or designated personnel cannot transport express milk to garrison, the soldier's commander will permit her the same time and space to express and discard her breast milk with the intent to maintain physiological capability for lactation. I wonder if there is, you get a pin for lactation expression.
It's not the Girl Scouts.
No, but it's, well. Commanders should work with the supporting medical officer to determine whether milk storage and or transportation will be feasible during the exercise. Commanders will counsel soldiers to discuss potential risk benefits of storing milk during field training and mobility exercises with their medical provider. The provisions of this directive are effective immediately and apply to the active Army, Army National Guard, Army National Guard of the United States, and U.S. Army Reserve. Thank you for that memo, that lactation memo. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to the Army for getting involved. That would be toughest during mobility, I think, field training. Did nothing you want to say about this?
No, I have no comments to add to that.
Oh, okay. All right. I think it's good that the Army is really
it is.
Good, considering
oh, it's
all
fantastic
all
that they are. Yeah.
Wonderful. Where can they send those memos or anything that really they want to communicate to us if they want to get it through to us? How would they do that?
They can send those memos to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, subject line memos, or go to notmuch.com and post them there.
As far as all the news around here that is, just really one huge story now that's looming, at which is about Sun Prairie, the groundhog in Sun Prairie. This is the story. Sun Prairie is without groundhog after mayor got bit last year. So they had to put the mayor down. Sun Prairie is without a groundhog for this year's Groundhog Day festivities after the animal used at last year's event bit the former mayor. See, he's former mayor. Images of Jimmy the groundhog biting then-Mayor John Freund's ear were widely circulated, bringing unwanted attention to Sun Prairie. Afterward, authorities told Jimmy's owner they needed a license to own a groundhog. That prompted the gougers to release Jimmy into the wild.
Aww.
And the mayor apparently as well. Ty Gouger manages the Business Improvement District, which organizes Groundhog Day festivities. So there's a little irony there. She tells the Wisconsin State Journal that organizers are scrambling for a replacement right now. Well, they know where they left. The thing must keep coming home. I mean, groundhogs must get attached like dogs, I would think. Gouger says the city's event will begin at sunrise February 2nd, even if no groundhog is found. Well, it's going to be a pretty... What are they going to do? Groundhog Day. What's going to see its shadow? The mayor, the ex-mayor saw his shadow today. But if a groundhog is found in time this year, it will be kept in a cage to avoid another nibble. Oh. There you have it. The big news, Sun Prairie groundhog crisis. That's all the news that is. Here's the really big news from Las Vegas. The Razzberries, the annual awards for the worst movies, worst direction, worst acting, worst screenplay, worst musical score, the Razzies. Ladies and gentlemen, John Wilson is the founder of the Razzies. He is the man behind it. And we're getting ready, I guess it's coming up at the end of I think after the Oscars, I think they come out with it towards the end of February. Let's find out what's on the list for this year at the Razzie Awards. Hi, John, how are you?
I'm doing better than our nominees.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And the Razzies is your invention, is it not?
Yes. Yes, I actually, 30-some years ago, I saw a 99-cent double feature of Can't Stop the Music and Xanadu, and that prompted me to come up with this. If you've seen either of those, you know what I'm talking about.
I've seen Xanadu. That really is a terrible movie.
That's a great, terrible movie, actually. Yeah. But yes, it's a terrible movie.
Yeah. Isn't it true that some of them are so bad that they are good again?
Oh, yeah. High on my list would be, and I now live where it was filmed, Showgirls.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Mommy Dearest with Joan, Faye Dunaway going to town as Joan Crawford and whacking on the kid with the wire hanger.
The wire hangers, yeah. It really set back wire hangers.
It did. I don't have any myself.
Yeah. They no longer have them, I think. And you can't buy them because of the way she whacked her kid with that. And Showgirls, I've watched that many times. Well, not the entire movie, but...
I don't know if you want to go there.
No, I don't want to go there. I would, but I won't.
On live radio.
That was quite a bad movie as well. And this year, of course, once again, you also named it like the worst actor, worst actress. Is that always well received by the recipient?
Take a wild guess. This is our 36th year,
36.
And in all those years, mm-hmm. less than 10 people have shown up to say, gee, thanks for pointing out that I stink.
Yeah.
the best one, and she's the benchmark for everyone else, Halle Berry, for, I think, financial reasons, followed up her Oscar win for Monsters Ball with a little turkey called Catwoman. And she was on our stage for over 8 minutes, getting a laugh every 20 seconds.
Yeah.
That is the great. And she basically said, thank you, Warner Brothers, for putting me in a piece of bleep awful movie.
Yeah. Yeah. As Catwoman, I saw a little clip you have on your website there, which you should check out, by the way, to see some of these acceptance speeches are quite moving. And she was, you ran the thing from the movie where she was, Catwoman was experiencing catnip.
Yes.
High point in American cinema, I would think.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Actually, I would like to point out, the Razzies aren't coming from a place of hatred. They're coming from a place of poking fun. And if somebody, you know, like Halle Berry intimated in that speech that she was paid $10 million for Catwoman.
Yeah.
If you got $10 million and it didn't work out, excuse me, you still have $10 million.
Yes.
Can't you laugh?
That's the good news, because most of us, when things don't work out, we get nothing for it.
That's true. If if our bosses gave out Razzies, we'd be in serious trouble, yes.
Yeah. Anyone who accepted it but did not have quite the same reaction as Halle Berry in terms of generosity of spirit?
Well, there is an interesting situation this year. We have a new award called the Razzie Redeemer, which is about people who have been up for our awards or won them in the past and who have since gone on and done good work. Mm-hmm. For the entire decade of the 80s, Sylvester Stallone was nominated for at least one quote-unquote achievement every single year. He's our all-time champion. He won Worst Actor of the Century 15 years ago. He is up for the Redeemer Award this year. He just got nominated for an Oscar for the first time in, 30-some years?
Yeah, for Creed.
He could, and he's favored to win the Redeemer Award for Creed. He actually, you know, when somebody does good stuff after we've had a little fun with them, that's a good thing. The Razzies actually are supposed to be about encouraging these people to do what we all know they can do. These are mostly people capable of better stuff, although there is Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler, and he must win every year as well, doesn't he?
He actually has an interesting distinction. His movie Jack and Jill, in which he played male and female cousins, is the only movie ever to win every single Razzie Award.
By the end
of that ceremony, the audience was chanting. Every time we hauled an envelope out, they all just started chanting, Jack and Jill, Jack and Jill.
Did Sandler appear to accept his...
No, it's interesting.
Ever?
We went out of our way to let him know he would have been welcome. He was actually in town for the Kids' Choice Awards that same weekend.
Yeah.
And suddenly the opportunity to go on vacation in Florida arose. We are not sure if it's related to us or not.
Yeah. Is it always in Vegas?
Oh, actually, no. We hold our ceremony
usually in
L.A. or Hollywood. I now live in Las Vegas.
Oh,
I've been doing this so long, I'm now old enough to claim I'm retired.
Yeah. Had to get out of town probably, huh? But still close enough.
There were a couple of people, yeah, with pop guns chasing after me.
Yeah. Are you on anybody's list in terms of actors that were named and you know for a fact that you don't want to actually meet them in person? Because they didn't quite
actually,
get the humor.
Well, actually, one of the other people who showed up, and I would not wish to interact with him again, Tom Green made the only Worst Picture winner that I actually will admit I hate. I think it's a disgusting, sick movie. It's called Freddy Got Fingered. It's a comedy about child abuse.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
He showed up, and when he accepted the Worst Picture Award, he started playing a harmonica and would not leave the stage. We turned off the lights. We turned off the mics. We finally went out on the stage as a group, pried his hands from the podium, and carried him screaming and flailing backstage, where he threatened to sue us.
Ah.
And the guy who had presented Worst Picture was actually in drag as Baby Jane from the old Betty Davis movie, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy looked Tom Green in the eye and said, "You're going to go to court and say a guy in a dress beat you up." I don't think so.
Yeah. Who was that? Who was that guy?
The guy who presented it is a very talented local actor named Dan Campbell.
Oh.
And he got the Betty Davis voice down perfect. Betty Davis talking about Mariah Carey in Glitter was a priceless moment.
Yeah, that sounds good. Sandra Bullock, she seemed like, I saw that moment, actually, when she accepted. And she was humorous about it, but she obviously was, didn't she win an Oscar and a Razzie for the same year?
Yeah, she so far, she's the only one, although I believe Johnny Depp is up for both us and the other one this year. So
Not for the same movie, because that movie
is never for the same movie. No. That's happened two or three times, but it's not usually in major categories.
Yeah. And Sandra Bullock, she has a good sense of humor. She seemed to be...
She did. There was a definite edge to it. The line that I remember is when she hauled the script for All About Steve out of her little red wagon, plopped it on the podium, and said, "Okay, let's see if you or me can read these lines better."
That was funny. That was a good idea.
Yeah. And the other thing that was cool is by showing up at the Razzies on Saturday night, as she walked up the red carpet at the Oscars the following night, every single crew knew she had been at the Razzies and asked her about it.
Yeah. How does the voting work for the Razzies?
We have currently a voting membership of, I think it's about 920 people, which I like to point out is 10 times as many as vote for the Golden Globes. They are a combination of people who cover the industry, people who work in the industry, and for the general public, we have a first-year voting membership rate of $40, and then following year it's $25, as long as you're having fun with it.
Yeah.
And then we look at four things when we're trying to decide what should be on that list.
Uh-huh.
We look at box office, which is Hollywood's own measure of what's successful, how much did it cost, how much was lost.
Uh-huh.
We look at a site that we love called Rotten Tomatoes, which is a meter, and it says, you know, how many percentage didn't like your movie. Of the five nominees for Worst Picture this year, the one with the highest negative rating was a successful box office movie. Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 had 95% negative reviews at Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Then we also looked
at... It was no one. You know, I saw one, and two was no one. I'll say that.
There was, and one was no one.
Yeah.
that was one of those movies where you go, well, okay, it made money, but why, you know, other than to make money, why are you doing another one of these?
Yeah.
I believe that, I think it was set in Las Vegas, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. So it has a connection to Showgirls there.
Yeah. There you go.
And then we also look at the history the people involved have with us. As you mentioned, Adam Sandler is a perennial.
Yeah.
Although he's now making movies for Netflix, I think that was a way to try and avoid, you know, the ongoing situation with us. I'm not sure.
Yeah, The Ridiculous Six. Netflix...
Well, and just to give you some idea how good that must be, I honestly have not had time to see it yet. One of the reviews said the funniest thing in it was Taylor Lautner. Now, you could take that one of two ways. Either Taylor Lautner was really funny, or this thing was so lame that Taylor Lautner was... Yeah. It wasn't clear to me how they meant that.
Yeah, it couldn't have been a good thing. Is what I think. It actually has a score of 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, so that's encouraging.
Whoa.
It's a step in the right direction. You know, Sandler can be quite a funny guy. You know, I like the Spanglish.
He is, yes.
Spanglish, I thought was good. And another one, the comedy
the
one.
The Hanukkah song. Yeah.
The Hanukkah song is
this
good.
This is what I'm talking about. We all know Adam Sandler can be brilliantly funny.
Yeah.
So why does he keep doing movies that insult the intelligence of 9-year-olds? Yeah. I don't understand.
Poor choices. You know, sometimes good people make bad choices.
He's usually involved creatively as well, as a producer, as a writer, I think they're called Grown Ups, the movies where all of his friends are hanging out with him. I see that as a way that he and his pals get paid to take a vacation. It's interesting, every time they do one of those, it's set somewhere that lots of people would love to be paid $5 or $6 million to go spend 2 months.
Yes. 49 Razzies got to mean something, right?
If you add up all the nominations from all of his movies over the years, it's probably heading toward 100.
Towards 100. And what can we expect from this year? The nominations are in already, I guess, aren't they?
They were announced the day before the Oscar nominations this week.
Yeah, what do we have?
We are doing our ceremony the night before the Academy Awards. We are Saturday, February 27th. The Oscars are Sunday, February 28th. Okay. And the next day is Leap Year Day, which gives us an extra day for bad movies to come out.
Good. what do we have? What's the field this year? What does it look like?
The five nominees for Worst Picture are Fantastic Four, an almost instant remake that somehow the fans of that stuff knew was a bad movie before it even came out.
Yeah.
50 Shades of Grey, which we are referring to as the most successful bad movie of last year.
Yeah.
It did make an awful lot of money, but it took a book most people thought was very erotic and made it about as exciting as cleaning your toilet.
Yes.
Adam Sandler, of course, is in there. Paul Blart, Mall Cop. And then actually it was an enjoyable bad movie. Of the five, it's the funniest one. Jupiter Ascending, which Eddie Redmayne, who a year ago won an Academy Award, is also up for Best Actor again this year for Danish Girl. He plays a space villain. And you can take that how you want. He's like in the stratosphere dramatically. He's so out of control in it. And you kind of think, well, he must be doing this on purpose, but it still is incredibly ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, Jupiter Ascent, I've tried to watch it. You know, there's something to be said when a movie goes directly to charter, the charter rotation. A very select few movies actually make it through immediately to charter rotation, but it's in there. Jupiter's in, and so is 50 Shades of Grey. They're both in charter rotation right now. So you can be thankful
as the founder, I do have to watch all this junk.
Yeah.
What I do is wait for it to show up at the public library so none of my money goes to these people.
50 Shades
and
may not.
For a whole week.
50 Shades may not get there.
Oh, no, it did. Yeah. Hey, listen, the Las Vegas library, are you kidding? Of course they're going to have 50 Shades of Grey.
I'm sorry, Las Vegas. You didn't indicate which library you meant. And Jupiter Ascending, so I knew we'd be speaking about it, and so I tried to watch it, and I caught it at the beginning, I caught it at the end, I caught it at the middle. I can't find a part of it that I can really figure out what is happening. I know it begins with Mila Kunis cleaning a toilet, and then we go... As the toilet is being cleaned, we go on to that spot on Jupiter, that big red spot, that black spot on Jupiter. And I guess it's correlation. And then on Jupiter, something else is happening that is in sync with
her. Jupiter Ascending is the latest fiasco from their siblings, the Wachowskis. They did The Matrix, the first one of which was huge and everyone liked it. The second one of which, not so much. The third one of which, it was like enough already.
Yeah.
This is them writing and directing. And it really doesn't. I actually did sit through it in one sitting, which I was impressed with myself for achieving that. But it doesn't make a lot of, even if you're not just, you know, fast-forwarding and jumping around and watching all the scenes where Mila Kunis is cleaning the toilets.
Yeah.
It's an intergalactic struggle to take over control of the universe, and Redmayne plays the son of the queen of the universe, who I'm trying to remember if she's dying, retiring, or both.
Yeah.
But this is his big chance, you know, to both take over the universe and potentially win a Razzie Award.
Yeah. All right, then maybe you can explain 50 Shades of Grey to me. What is actually happening with these people, and why are they so annoying and so anti-sexual in their sex? I don't understand.
And most importantly, why should we care?
Yeah, why should we care?
My favorite scene in that movie, he presents her with a contract as to what the parameters of their S&M relationship are going to be. And they're going through all of the Latin terms for sex acts, and she's saying, well, no on that. Well, maybe yes on that, but only for 5 minutes. Well,
get back to you on that.
I'm not sure what you can let me say on NPR. So
I'm not sure either, but I'm sure
your audience knows many of them.
Yeah. Worst actor, worst actress?
Worst actor, we have Johnny Depp for Mordecai.
Terrible movie.
We have Jamie Dornan in 50 Shades.
Yeah.
We have Kevin James in Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Yeah, yeah.
We have, surprise, surprise, Adam Sandler in both The Cobbler and Pixels.
Yeah, too.
And we have Channing Tatum, who it kind of looks like the makeup people had an argument whether he was supposed to be half dog or he was supposed to be Mr. Spock. The makeup on him is amazing.
That's in Jupiter, whatever.
Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, Ascending, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nobody was good in that, so that's not surprising. Okay, that's pretty much. And Depp, once again, another guy who makes bad choices in movies. You know, I mean, I love Johnny Depp.
Well, California has a three strikes, you're out law about crime. If that applied to movies, Johnny Depp would be in cinema jail. He has made The Lone Ranger. He made, what was the one where he was a hologram? He made.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
He's done more than his share of Drek. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's too bad. And worst actress?
All right. We have Katherine Heigl in a thing called Home Sweet Hell. We have Jennifer Lopez, another perennial, in The Boy Next Door, where she's a school teacher that a kid has a crush on.
Wow.
We have, of course, Mila Kunis in Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah.
We have, do you have the list in front of you? Because I honestly don't have
it. No, I'm writing them down as you say them, but I haven't
when
you're done.
Okay, Dakota Johnson in 50 Shades of Grey. And let me try and remember. Gwyneth Paltrow in Mordecai.
Okay, Gwyneth Paltrow. She's the odds-on favorite, I would think, just because people like to see her win a Razzie, I think. Don't you think?
That people who've won an Oscar and then, you know, that's not the right career trajectory to go from them to us.
Yeah.
And the Redeemer Award, as I said, is about people who go the other direction.
Yeah.
But Johnny Depp, as you were saying, he's up for both this year. I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember from the voting. It looks, from the early voting, we went ahead and put the ballot up already.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like there might be a sweep for 50 Shades of Grey.
Ah, it could sweep all categories?
In the categories it's in at this point,
okay.
it's trending, shall we say.
Do you do film scores as well? Or
we used to have that category, and we used to convene a committee back when we were first starting and the whole membership wasn't even 100 people.
Mm.
A really bad film score, it's kind of subjective as to what's a bad film score. Somebody told me that the score that Ennio Morricone just got nominated for an Oscar for Hateful Eight, is actually, he's rehashing the score he wrote for one of the great bad movies of all time, Exorcist II, The Heretic.
Boy, I got to digest that information, because I did see it. I mean, I ripped off the movie.
That's
and watched
a real mental
it.
Boomerang, isn't it?
Yeah, and I thought the music was good, but... What I didn't understand about Hateful Eight is why they used those giant Cinerama lenses on a film that took place in a hut in the middle of Wyoming.
It's a cabin.
So they had these great Cinerama.
Quentin Tarantino is one of those people who, he's probably president of his own fan club, as you know.
Sure, certainly, yeah. Yeah. Well, John, I want to thank you very much for giving us an insider's look at the Razzies coming up the night before the Oscars. We'll look for you, and sounds pretty exciting. Another exciting year for the Razzies.
Speaking of sounds, let me give you the sound that inspired the whole Razzie thing.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Thank you, John Wilson, from the Razzies.
Lovely sign-off. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me. All right. There you have it. With sound and everything. But worst sound heard on public radio. All righty. Anything you want to argue against of those?
No.
Did you see any of those?
I did see The Lone Ranger. That was horrible.
That was bad.
So. That's about the only one that I can think of that I saw.
Yeah.
That was
of them, you know, Johnny Depp is the only one I'm disappointed in, kind of, because I think he's really kind of cool guy, and he's good at
it. Yeah, I was looking forward to that movie, because I used to like The Lone Ranger when I was a little kid, but it was like, man.
It goes off the deep end on all that stuff. You see the Mordecai?
No, I didn't see that.
I saw the first 7 minutes of it or something. It was unbelievable.
Even the previews were awful for that movie.
Yeah. If you can't get a good, you know, like 2 minutes for a preview, then you know the movie's in trouble. All right, so, but you're doing movie scores today? Is that in honor of the Razzies?
No.
That last one was a movie score.
Yeah, it was, but they didn't get a Razzie.
No.
This one should get an award.
Yeah.
But it probably won't. Uh-huh. That's one of my tunes called Probably Not.
Probably Not. An award in this one.
Thank you.
You're listening to Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, Michael Feldman.
So how's the bass going for you?
Pretty good.
Yeah. Are you playing in a band or anything? Or?
Trying to.
Trying to?
None of us can get together at the same time.
Oh, yeah. So you got other people you play with if you could find them?
Yeah.
How long have you been doing it?
I got my first bass in August last year.
You ever play one of these expensive ones like Jeff has?
No.
I'll try it. He'll let you do it.
No, thank you.
Okay, another time perhaps. And your name is?
Izzy Kalinowski.
Izzy. Okay. I got your card here somewhere, too. What'd you write on your card? It was something very abstract. You remember what it was?
It was a Monty Python reference.
Oh, go ahead and make it.
It's three questions. What is your name? What is your quest? And what is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
Very good. Thank you for that, Izzy. All right, Jack Carr's got a simpler question here. When can we expect warmer weather? Now, I don't think my children, but perhaps my children's children can expect warmer weather with global warming. I'm saying it's going to take a generation or two before we get enough carbon. So really, we should be trying to increase carbon, our carbon footprints. If all of us could just make a little more effort to have a larger carbon footprint, we could have warmer weather by the next generation. Otherwise, it's more of the same. Come on. Not going to get better. Food scientist. Oh, Bob, who read the disclaimers there. He's a food scientist. Where are you, Bob?
I'm hiding in front.
Oh, you're hiding in front there. Okay. Excuse me. I got to see Bob here, the food scientist. Well, stand up here, Bob. Let's find out a little more about you. Food science. What is it? Why do we need it?
It's a person who tries to find, at least in my line of work, tries to find unique uses for whey proteins.
Oh, for whey. You're in strictly no curds, strictly whey.
The curds are put to very good use, and then we try to find uses for the whey.
Curds you can press together and make cheese or cottage cheese or
and
whatever.
You should, in fact, do that.
You should do that, because otherwise why have you gotten that far in the process?
Right. We can't just milk for whey. We have to get all of the milk, so we might as well make some cheese.
No way. All right. John. No way, John. Yes, no. Take a bow. Take a bow. By the way, your song was great, by the way. I didn't mention it. It was really nice. For people who don't know whey.
Like John.
What is whey? Where does whey come into it?
Well, I'm worried about making another pun. I'm a little nervous about that. Okay.
Your business is inevitable.
When you milk a cow and you want to make cheese, which hopefully you do, you're left over with some material that doesn't coagulate, and that liquid is called whey, and it's full of protein.
So and part of the milk itself.
It is, yes.
Does it form when you're actually doing the cheese making process, or is it just separated out, or is it always there in the milk no matter what?
The cheese separates out. So you have milk and you add your enzymes or your.
That's what I meant.
And that you make a solid forms, and that becomes your cheese. Yeah. The liquid that's left over is the whey.
Yeah. So we're forced with an industrial problem of all hundreds of millions of gallons of whey, formerly useless, that had to, what did they do with it?
Well, this is the kind of thing that bodybuilders or people who are fitness enthusiasts might buy in a jar.
The bodybuilders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or in the Milwaukee area, I think, spread it on the streets.
Steroid type quality, or they spread it on the streets in Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly. To you know, de-ice the roads.
Does it work?
I don't live in Milwaukee, so I don't know. Maybe someone else can speak to that.
Yeah. Anyone notice any whey on their way here from Milwaukee? Yeah. Okay. It probably doesn't work, but they got to.
You got to get rid of it somehow.
But you, and who do you do this for? Is this a personal quest?
Yes, it is, to eliminate waste. No, the company is AgroPure. They have a couple of locations in Wisconsin, and the one that I work for is in the Twin Cities area.
Yeah, And you come up with some amazing uses for whey.
Fantastic. Unimaginably fantastic uses.
Can you mention some of them, or is it all protected?
They are kind of protected at this moment.
Yeah. Plastics? Can you make plastics out?
Actually, yeah. Yeah, you can make packages out of whey, yes.
There you go. Okay. Give me another one.
we make jars of whey protein powder.
Protein powder, okay.
Yep. Muffins. We make muffins with whey.
What about bass strings?
Probably. I hope that my boss isn't listening because I don't want that to be my next assignment.
Can we extrude whey into bass strings? So, how much does a bass string cost?
Pretty expensive.
$400 a set.
$400 a set for bass strings. Tell your boss that and see what he says.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
And where did you learn all this? At the University of Wisconsin?
I did go to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, right. Yes.
Way to go!
Thank you.
Bob Batson, now in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but he's from here. Come on. We got Michael. Thank you. We got a little excited there for a minute.
Yeah,
you got one good line, and
yeah,
you just can't.
Yeah,
stop. Michael Quinlan, I'm a drummer and a swimmer. Oh, that's you again. Come on, stand up here, Michael Quinlan. You seem to have taken over the show, so I'll let you do it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Do a few minutes. Have you done anything in front of groups? You're a drummer. So.
I'm in a band with my brothers here. We do.
Oh, come on, all brothers here then. Now we got Michael and your band. You're actually a band?
I'm Matthew. Mark.
You were unsure of your name, or you just you didn't change it? You could have a stage name that's totally different.
Jeff.
No, I was thinking like Killer Mark or something. You know, something like rap sort of name. And so you guys are in a band together.
Mm-hmm.
Does it work out? Is there any like, personalities getting away?
No, it's pretty. I mean, we'll have some fights and sometimes, but mostly the instruments don't break in those, so it's pretty good.
Yeah, and you're the drummer.
Yep. And Matthew's the guitarist.
You're the guitarist?
Yeah, I play guitar and sing.
Yeah, and you're?
The bassist.
You're the bassist? Well, this is so cool, isn't it? And is it just the three of you then?
Yep. Try to keep it like a family band. I mean, we'll have kids that always come up to us like in school and stuff and be like, oh man, can we join your band? And all this stuff. And we're like, you know, if we let everyone join our band, we'd have like 100 kids. So,
yeah.
And plus, it's special because it's just us three brothers.
Plus.
It's kind of cool.
You have to gene type them to see if they're actually related.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if we could find someone that turned out they're a long-lost brother, we wouldn't hesitate.
Yeah.
You know, they're in our band.
Yeah.
They can get whatever they want.
Yeah. Is this the entire family, then? Is there anyone else in the family who might join later?
No, I don't think so.
No. Mom? Anything you want to tell us? You could use a female backup singer, at least. If not a lead singer, don't get me wrong. What? A big sister.
Oh.
I don't think Santa does that anymore.
Yeah, no.
You're past that stage.
Yeah.
And what kind of music do you do?
Oh, do you like rock? Yeah.
Like rock?
Yeah.
Like rock or like rock?
Like rock.
Rock.
Yeah.
Like, for example, what kind of?
Oh, like, he knows more about it than I do.
Yeah.
We do like kind of like 80s rock kind of stuff.
80s, yeah. Like
who? Like AC/DC, Guns N' Roses. Yeah, some of that stuff. Yeah.
One of our own songs, too.
Yeah.
We're
not just a cover band. You write the original.
We write our own songs. We're in the process of making an album right now.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
And who does the writing?
Mostly Matthew, because he's the singer and the writer mostly. So.
I should really talking to Matthew instead of
you. You know what? We can just sit down.
Matthew, your band here, where'd you get the idea for it?
Actually, in the third grade, it was my friend and I in third grade, and some girls in our class wanted us to sing to them. So then we did. And then.
You were a killer in the third grade?
And then a whole bunch of our friends wanted to come sing with us. So then they did, and we started our first band. It was just an a cappella band, and we had six people.
Yeah.
And we did like some talent shows and stuff, and we did a fundraiser concert. I think we raised like $1,000 or so.
Really?
Yeah, and then we moved to Utah,
So this was all here yet?
This was here, and then we moved to Utah, and so that...
What happened to the girl in third grade?
Oh, I don't know where they are now.
Staying?
No. Okay,
I thought maybe it was, you know...
No. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah, so then that band broke up, and then I started playing the guitar, and Mark started playing the bass, Mike started playing the drums, and then we just kind of went from there, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Going right. What's the band called?
Triumph.
I love it. You guys are good.
Thank you.
You like being? How is it being in a band with your brothers? Is that cool?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good compared to what? Right.
Right.
I'm saying.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. You have to do a lot of rehearsing and stuff.
No.
No, you don't rehearse at all. You're just sort of natural musicians.
Yeah.
Is there someone in your family who is a musician or that sort of gave you the gift? Or
yeah, my dad plays trumpet, my mom plays French horn and piano, so...
So this is bound to happen.
Yeah, I guess so.
You got to expect this if one of you plays a French horn, of you is...
Yeah.
Excellent. And the drummer thing, that's a pretty cool thing, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I used to, like, just drum on my lap and stuff like that in class.
Yeah, I have had students like that.
Yeah, I've gotten yelled at a few times, but...
You can always tell the drummers in the school.
Yeah. But then one Christmas, I was walking home, and I looked in the window and saw the drum set, and I ran inside, and it was like the dream was coming true. It was all coming together, and it was amazing. And so now I play the drums all the time and stuff, and they play their instruments. It's pretty sweet.
You guys, cool. You kill me. You're great. The Triumph. Triumph of the Quinlan. Right? Quinlan family. Fantastic. All right, that's cool. I thought I heard a basketball horn there.
Yep, you heard the air horn.
The second half?
Yep.
You all ready?
It's quiz time.
All right, so let's just see here now who wants to play this year quiz that we have. And well, come on, Izzy. Yeah, come on. I feel like I owe you something for putting you on the spot. Izzy's going to come up there and play it. Come here thinking you were going to do that, Izzy, or it just occurred to you that?
Might as well try, right?
Might as well try it. That's good. Where are you in school right now? What year?
I'm a sophomore in high school.
Sophomore in high school. And where is that?
Sauk Prairie High School.
Sauk Prairie, the fighting, what are they?
Eagles.
The Fighting Eagles of Sauk Prairie, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, Izzy. Is it Dora?
Izzy, Isabel.
Isabel.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Down the line there, and great to have you here, and I'm glad you want to try this, and I think you do really well because you're as smart as you're ever going to be at your age, you know. It only gets, you know, by the time you're a junior, it's already this. So I'm glad we got you right now, and how does this work then? To play with Izzy.
If people want to play with Izzy, they're going to pick up the phone and dial 800-942-5669 and answer this qualifying question.
Oop. Okay. Okay, here's the question. 15 years of Wikipedia, they've calculated the most edited Wikipedia page of any page in Wikipedia. There are some pages that keep taking them down because people try to get in there and re-edit them and so forth. But the question is, it's an individual, who has the most edited Wikipedia page on Wikipedia? Go to the phones right now. If you can tell us that, then you get to play in the quiz here. I'll tell you, it's a rather famous individual. And let's see how much more I have to say about that. And Ray's on the line from Beaufort, South Carolina. Beaufort.
Hi. How you doing?
How are you, Ray?
I'm good.
Is it beautiful down there?
It's mild. It's in low 60s and sunny.
Low 60s. That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in the upper teens here right now, but it's dropping. So,
well, I know how that is. I'm originally from New York, so I know how that is.
Do you miss the change of seasons and all that, Ray?
Not that much. No.
No. Okay.
No.
I don't think I would either. Tell you the truth.
Well, I'm 70 something and retired, and
are you really?
I've had enough of the change of seasons, so yeah. I like the mildness. So.
I know. I've seen enough of them. It's kind of know what's going to happen. The most edited Wikipedia page. this individual?
I'm going to have to guess Donald Trump.
No, but I bet he's getting there close. No, I'm sorry. Not him. Max, try it. Okay. Try us again.
All right, thank you.
Laura's in Oconomowoc. Spell that if you can. I have trouble with Oconomowoc. It actually works out if you try it. Hi, Laura.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good.
Is it beautiful down there in Oconomowoc?
For January, yes.
Yeah, balmy out there. Mm-hmm. Are you on the lake there? Or?
No, I'm actually north of the lake, about a mile.
Okay, so you don't get the lake effect.
No.
Okay. Laura, most edited Wikipedia page.
President Obama.
No, but he's among them, but he's not. Actually, he's right behind Jesus. As far as edits. Thanks, though, for trying.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, it could be someone presidential, though. It wasn't Obama, but it's entirely possible it was someone presidential. In Columbus, Ohio, Tracy.
Hi.
Hi. You know the most edited Wikipedia page of all?
President George W. Bush.
George W. Bush is the winner in this category only. Tracy, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
I always liked Columbus, Ohio. I had fun going there. I always had a good time in Columbus, Ohio. And what do you do there in Columbus?
I work for an education nonprofit organization.
Uh-huh. What do you do
and
for
so
that?
I work with lots of school districts in uh-huh. southeastern Ohio.
Oh, boy.
I love it.
Yeah, do you? Do you have to travel around the state constantly?
No, not really. I mean, I do on occasion, but, you know, we try not to travel as much during the winter months because it can get, you know, kind of perilous when you're driving up and down, you know, those areas in Muskingum County and Noble County, so.
Oh, yeah, you name it. You got them mm-hmm. counties there in Ohio. Tracy, this is Izzy.
Hi.
Hi, Izzy.
She's very, very smart. She doesn't like to brag about it, but you can tell that she is. So you got a good partner here. The two of you work as a team and collaborate. We have various categories.
We do. Those categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Tracy, pick first one. What would you like?
Things you should have learned in school.
School it is. Okay, what is a flock of crows called again?
A murder.
Oh, how did you know that, Tracy? Did you know that?
Smart like Izzy.
Okay, yes. A murder, yes. A murder of crows is a flock. I guess that's well known. I was surprised.
That's one right, and the remaining categories are current events, people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Izzy?
Let's go with odds and ends.
Odds and ends. These can get pretty weird. No, that's not good. Okay, here. Can the number of times wasted appears on your Facebook posts affect your credit score?
Oh, man.
Talk it over.
What do you think?
I have no idea. I don't have a Facebook account.
You don't? Yeah, really. That's good news.
I would say no. I
would agree no.
Either no or yes would be the answer.
Okay.
You can pick either one, no?
Yeah. It's a
yes or no question is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, probably no. Yeah.
Wasted on your Facebook. Do they look at that in terms of judging your credit score is the question.
C.
What?
C.
Yeah.
There is no C. It's just A or B. Tracy, you say no?
You know what? I would say no, but I don't know. I don't put this kind of picture, so I have no idea.
Okay. Well, yes. Apparently it's yes, according to your FICO people who keep that. So don't put wasted on your Facebook.
Word of caution to everyone. All right, that's one right, one wrong. The remaining categories are current events, people, places, and science.
Okay, Tracy, back to you.
Let's do current events.
Current events? Okay, the Playboy Mansion is for sale. What's the catch?
Oh, I know this one.
Yes.
That Hugh Hefner gets to stay there because it's like his creative center.
Agree, is he?
Yeah.
Yes, it comes with Hugh Hefner, a guy who's never out of his pajamas. An old guy in his pajamas. Just what you want. That's a deal killer. That would be...
That's two right, one wrong. Okay. And the remaining categories are people, places, and science.
All right.
Let's go with places.
Places are 80. All right. Okay. All right. Here's something of local interest. Worst traffic bottleneck in the U.S. Is it in L.A., Dubuque, or Chicago?
Oh, geez. I don't know.
Yeah, that's hard.
You know what? I would think it's either L.A. or Chicago.
Okay. I would, too. Yeah. Chicago's pretty crazy.
Well.
This is hard.
Why don't you pick one?
John's familiar with this particular answer.
Oh. Let's see. I have no idea, honestly. This is hard.
Worst bottleneck.
No, that's
just... Ever been on I-90 when you're...
I'm just go with Chicago.
On the Kennedy there where you're... Stops there, and you get 94 West, and then O'Hare goes the other way.
In Chicago, maybe?
Yeah.
No, I was just being reminiscing about something.
Oh.
So you're saying Chicago?
I think that's what we've agreed on.
Chicago is right, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That one there. Where you can go O'Hare, or you go to Milwaukee, but you're going nowhere.
Izzy, you've won a plethora of radio comedy frozen in time with three classic CD compilations, What Do You Know Roadkill, Why Not the Best of What Do You Know, and What Do You Know The First 25 Years Are the Hardest, all personally approved by Michael Feldman. And Tracy, take a walk on the mild side and leave no parent behind in Michael's book, Something I Said, Innuendo and Out the Other, including the CD My Life the Musical, performed by John Seeger from Terrace Books. Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
Be a part of
Good
What You Know in 2016. Join
Tracy,
us Saturday mornings
sure
here on
the
Monona Terrace. Show dates, ticket, and guest information is available at notmuch.com. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Hannah Poth, Kelly Osborne, and Diana Cook. Technical Director Tom Blaine with help from Brad Kohlberg.
Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it. Thank you for listening at home. Come down and join us if you can. Make it sometime here at beautiful Monona Terrace. Talk to you next week.
PRI, Public Radio International.